I'm Michelle Light. I started working with EAD back when I was a graduate student at the University of Michigan in 1997, and EAD has dominated my life ever since. I have been involved with the creation and conversion of finding aids, especially through my tour of archival institutions in the United States. Since Michigan, I've worked at Yale University, Northeastern University, University of Washington, and now I'm at University of California at Irvine. When I first was thinking about this presentation, I had titled it Two Attempts at Being Provocative in Less Than 15 Minutes. It has now become the endangerment of trees, and I hope I can make that point clear. Last year, when I was participating on a committee to redesign the Online Archive of California, many of us wanted to enable browsing finding aids by subject. Even better, we imagined using subject facets to help users explore or limit their search results. We discovered, however, that only about 60% of the finding aids used controlled access tags. If we really wanted this feature, would we have to go back to institutions and ask them to re-encode or re-index their finding aids? In an age where more product, less process, and the mantra of more, faster, cheaper have hit archival processing, would this even be tenable? We decided no. And OAC designers have come up with other innovative ways to enhance access with the data that is already available to them. But this got me to thinking, there's a lot of information in OAC. And as expected in a big consortium, this information is not always encoded consistently in ways that allow for much manipulation, other than searching and viewing the document as it's encoded. What use is all this information in the finding aid? Are we really creating description in order to maximize the accessibility of collection materials to our users? What really is necessary in an online finding aid? How can we encode more intelligently? Is more necessarily better, or could we do more with less if we did less strategically? In other words, how can we get more bang for our buck with archival description? For the sake of answering these questions, I'll posit that we do archival description in order to facilitate users' discovery of materials. Note that I'm deliberately not saying that we do archival description to represent the work we do, or to represent the exact state of the physical collection. We create finding aids to help people find things. We can measure success in many ways, but I'm going to focus on two. Whether in response to a user's query, a finding aid is surfaced that describes materials he or she needs, and two, that the finding aid directs the users within 1 to 4 feet, 1 to 4 boxes of the needed material. According to a 2003 OCLC user study, 89% of college and university students started their information search on an internet search engine, but only 2% started on the library's webpage. When I examined the UC Irvine's web statistics for the finding aids, I discovered that about 90% entered through a search engine. Very few of that actually stayed for more than 30 seconds, but I think that's a completely different can of worms. Whether we like it or not, most of our potential users will find our finding aids through a back door that is opened from a search engine. So how can we support this? I wanted to look at the search engine optimization, buzzwords for quite some time, I think, in the web design field. Search engine optimization is the art, craft, and science of driving web traffic to websites. One of the first tricks of the trade is to look at the keyword density on a page. One of many ways search engines rank pages or try to evaluate the nature of a page's content is to look at how often keywords repeat or how often the same or similar words are used on a page. Out of curiosity, I wanted to see what a search engine might interpret from UC Irvine's finding aids. So I used one of those free keyword analyzers that are out there on the web and pushed some of my finding aids through. According to these sites, my finding aids were about boxes, folders, materials, undated, circa, correspondence, and individual dates like 1983 or 1996. In very few finding aids, California came up, and in a couple finding aids, I actually had the last name of one of the record creators, but not in very many at all. So the most important concepts in the finding aid were not represented by a significant number of keywords for the search engine's index. Why? Probably because of one of the most fundamental international principles of archival description, that description should proceed in a top-down manner from the most general level to the most specific, branching like a tree. At each hierarchical level, we record information pertinent to that level and strive not to repeat the information from level to level. So we deliberately do not repeat keywords that represent the most important content of our collections. While this may make sense from a management perspective or when human readers are reading the finding aids, why should we repeat the same information over and over again? Does it continue to make sense for delivering finding aids on the web when search engines evaluate key content according to the presence of keywords? Luckily, search engines such as Google also use many other factors to rank pages. Some of you may be thinking, my finding aids regularly appear within the top 10 of Google searches. One reason may be the long tail keyword. The long tail is a type of statistical distribution where a high frequency population is followed by a low frequency population which gradually tails off. This tail is often long, meaning that the total number of infrequently used keywords outnumbers the total of the top 10 keywords. Most traffic to a site is not the result of users typing in the most commonly used keywords, but the rarely used ones. Search engines often assign a greater value to keywords that don't appear that often in an index. So finding aids with lots of unusual words or names will rise to the top. In a way, our container lists with lots of unusual words or names with unique names of people, places, organizations, or topics help us capture a niche market on the internet. Increasingly, or interestingly enough, since I've had my processors use DAX to construct titles for collections, series, or folder names, the numbers of these long-tail unique keywords has really increased in the finding aids, and I think that's largely due to the presence of name segments in the titles. But I think the irony is, in a search engine's eyes, our finding aids are probably better at surfacing the content of the folders than they are at surfacing the content of the entire collection or of the series. Don't despair yet, though. Search engines also have other ways to assign value. They assign greater value to words in the title of an HTML page, or in the heading elements, or at the information at the very top of your page. As expected, search engines also like information that contribute to the web of interconnected pages. So they like pages that aren't just dead ends on the internet. Pages that are linked to by authoritative sources, and yes, Wikipedia is considered an authoritative source by Google and other search engines. These pages are given higher ranks. Pages that link outwards to these authoritative sources are also preferred. So how should we respond in the search engine environment with these trends in user behavior and the realities expressed by more product, less process? First, realize that you are creating finding aids for the web and that Google is now your most used index. Efficient description in an online environment must communicate the main content of the collection and surface some significant or unusual content lower down. So the most important content should be represented towards the top of your finding aids. When summarizing the content of the collection, use meaningful keywords that users would most likely search for. Maybe you should bend some of those archival rules about repeating key names and concepts. And what I emphasize when I'm training new processors is that your finding aid shouldn't contain a lot of unnecessary noise. That is, don't repeat non-unique words that don't add any value to the findability or the understandability of your finding aids. Not only does it take more work to describe more, you're making your finding aids harder to use. So for example, don't create long folder lists of material types, such as a long scrolling list that repeats correspondence or president's reports 25 times, all with a different date. Say it with less and only list what is necessary to get someone within 1 to 4 boxes of what they want. Sometimes folder lists are very useful enterprises and worth it if, without arranging the items within or across folders, the folder titles will yield some significant long-tail keywords, such as the names of important individuals, organizations, places, or important subjects. In these cases, folder-level description can lead users to you, but that's not always the case. Think about the value of the description in an online environment before investing in that description. Now that we're in the digital environment, I've sometimes quipped that we should do more description, less arrangement. Description is often thought of as a consequence of arrangement, ideally done at the same level as arrangement or preservation. But I wonder if description in an online environment will allow us to shift the burden of arrangement or that intellectual sense-making to users. For example, what if we did our finding aids in such a way that users can arrange materials intellectually based on searching or other means, and then through their sequence of call slips, arrange materials in their own way? I was also inspired by the book Everything is Miscellaneous by David Weinberger. That book made me question the nature of archival description in the digital environment. Weinberger contrasts the systems of organization in the physical and digital worlds. In the physical world, we are limited by the fact that an object can only be in one place at one time. To organize the physical world, humans like to categorize things or nest information in classification systems, such as the Dewey Decimal System. The shape of this knowledge has assumed the shape of a tree. In the digital environment, we don't have the same limitations as in the physical environment. The best form of order in the digital world, according to Weinberger, is to make everything miscellaneous. Put everything in a big pile, provide a lot of metadata, so that a single leaf can exist on many branches of a tree, and allow users to help describe materials through tagging. Machines then will do the work of sorting through all this information and will deliver to users an organization that makes sense for their specific needs. For example, Weinberger discusses the BBC's broadcasting archives dilemma in providing access to digitized recordings. Initially, in order to access the programs online, you had to navigate through a structure that organized the files according to which station produced the recording and the station's schedule. But BBC found that people didn't care where the program originated or when it was aired. They just wanted the program. So the BBC tore apart this hierarchical structure. They are making the digital objects miscellaneous. It is miscellaneous because how the content is actually arranged does not determine how the users can access that content. It is miscellaneous because users don't need to know the inner organization, and the system gives the flexibility to users the flexibility to order the pieces the way they want. If we have information in miscellaneous piles with lots of metadata, then it's like having a Dewey Decimal System written to order for each user. Archival finding aids were perfected for managing information housed in one physical place, for providing objects with intellectual context and a physical map of sorts for the retrieval. EAD is that hierarchical tree structure that Weinberger calls outdated, where components usually have one place, one context. That works for the physical world, but will that way of seeing and organizing the world work with the digital records of our future? Do we really need to perpetuate the tree metaphor in the online environment? Last month, when I was checking out the new delivery system for the digitized collections of the Smithsonian's Archives of American Art, I saw that it used the traditional finding aid structure very effectively in the digital environment. The finding aid structure endowed the digital objects with an intellectual and physical context, but those were digitized items. What about born digital items that don't necessarily have one physical place? What about born digital records that are collaboratively produced, that there are multiple ways to understand context? Weinberger's idea of a big, messy pile where objects have lots of metadata to provide context and meaning may be a more suitable way to understand a born digital landscape, where users can access materials through searching and generate their own meaning and views. I wonder, in the future, will our EAD and finding aid structures be generated on demand to represent materials in their context, rather than being a static way we manage our holdings? Will our finding aids merely exist in the realm of multiple possibilities, waiting to be assembled by a user query? Will our top-down way of organizing information be the way of the future? Or will our description focus more on lower levels, filling out contextual information and relationships to enhance retrieval possibilities and enable our users to put the pieces back together? At this conference, I learned from Ann Sauer, who is at Tufts, her research poster about OAI-ORE. The ORE stands for Object Reuse and Exchange. I learned that this might not be science fiction. OAI-ORE defines standards that will facilitate the identification and description of aggregations of web resources, the parts of which may have various relationships to each other and make up a whole. It gives compound web objects a clear boundary and defines their internal and external relationships. It allows you to reference an object and understand its context. Anne's diagrams showed how this might work among collections, series, items, creators, and other contextual information. So I know that I will continue to work for some time in a mixed world where physical and digital live side by side, and I will continue for now to manage them in ways that have always made sense in the physical environment. But I used to think that I could apply the same archival materials, the same archival principles to any archival materials, no matter whether they were physical or digital. But I'm increasingly less sure. I'm inclined to believe the grand statement of Weinberger, that the shape of our knowledge is changing. The hierarchical trees that I use every day to make sense of the archival collections under my care are being called into question. I'm excited, but I must admit I'm very apprehensive to imagine this future and see how the archival profession will respond. Thank you.